Hello, everybody. Today, we are talking about 2025 art school applications. If you would like to grow as an artist and you can't take an art class, we've got everything you need here at Art Prof: critiques, tutorials, professional development, and workshops. Art school portfolios may seem like they are months away, but you would be surprised how quickly a lot of this pops up. And so I'm going to provide today some critical information for how to get started. And if any of you would like to pick my brain about any aspect, BFA, MFA portfolios, please type those into the chat and I will get to them. The first thing that I'm going to say is the biggest mistake that I see in art school portfolios is people waiting until their portfolio is finished to get feedback. That is a mistake because oftentimes I work with people applying for art school and they oftentimes think that the only time a critique is helpful is when you're finished with your portfolio. And that is not true because actually we offer so many different types of critiques in the Discord, in our art school portfolios group. And sometimes I think that the work in progress critiques are actually the most important ones because you are able to really catch fundamental problems that are very difficult to do later on. One thing I work with people on quite a bit is composition. And if you're trying to fix your composition 50 hours into a painting, it's very stressful. And most of us don't want to do that. And so when I'm able to look at a thumbnail sketch, when I'm able to get somebody to really think deliberately about a color scheme, that is so much more important because what happens a lot with art school portfolios is people end up barking up the wrong tree, which is really frustrating. And actually that is particularly pronounced in MFA applications. I'm not saying that doesn't happen with BFA applications, but a lot of the MFA students I've worked with have totally wrong information. I think because there's not a ton of information about MFA portfolios. And so the information that you do get is usually either very vague or it's just wrong. And so that's why I'm gonna tell you guys now, months before you apply, all of the misinformation, and I'm going to give you the right information that is accurate. And then another mistake that people make with portfolios, and I think this sort of goes across all artists in general, people thinking that they have to do it by themselves. So tell me in the chat, who here has ever felt pressure that you should be able to do everything on your own with no support, no feedback? Because I don't think that's possible to really grow as an artist if you aren't getting some degree of feedback. Now, I know people get feedback or don't get feedback in a number of places. I know for a lot of people, the first people to ask are the people around you, friends and family. But even though I'm sure they have good intentions, they're oftentimes giving you really bad information. Tell me in the chat who here has gotten really bad, frustrating advice from your family or friends, because I just hear students tell me that their parent is talking to them about, you have to go into graphic design because that's how you make money. And I'm like, it is not that straightforward for any field. And a lot of people don't even know or have an accurate point of view on what, let's say, the field of graphic design actually is. And I've had students go to art school and say to me, well, I want to go into industrial design. And then what a lot of people do at RISD is they have a winter session, which is a 5-week semester. And the emphasis on winter session is to experiment, try something outside of your field. A lot of freshmen take winter session classes because they're thinking about, oh, I might want to major in this. And it's extremely common for a student to say, oh, I want to go into industrial design. And then they take an industrial design class and they realize, oh my gosh, this is not what I thought industrial design was all about. Like a lot of people will say to me, oh, architecture, that's all about math. I'm like, not really. I mean, it's part of it. I'm not saying it's not, but I just think, unfortunately, there's a lot of misinformation online, and MFA portfolios are the one where I see it the most. So tell me in the chat, have any of you guys had that experience where you saw something or heard something in a video and then you realized at a point later on, oh my gosh, that is just really off or just blatantly wrong? Because I've had people in MFA applications say things to me like, oh, artist statement, isn't that basically your resume? I'm like, no, an artist statement's a totally separate thing. And so unfortunately, in a lot of art stuff, there's a lot of misinformation. And I feel like a big part of our responsibility here at ArtProf is to get people the right information. Now, of course, there's a lot of things about being an artist that are not related to things being precise. So much of it is opinion-based. And one person may think one thing, somebody else might think something else. But sometimes it's just wrong. Like sometimes people comment on our YouTube and they will talk in very black and white terms. And my response is always, listen, it's way more nuanced than that. And I think online, unfortunately, people are very into things being total hyperbole. But if you want to really understand something with any degree of depth, you have to recognize that nuance takes longer, more than 10 seconds to understand. People tell me a lot that our channel is very academic. And I find it very funny because coming from academia, it's not, but it's all relative, of course. It all depends on the person and the context. This is really well said, Seven Angelic. Pressure to exist in this amazing bubble of self-sufficiency permeates in a lot of life. That's me. I mean, I don't like asking for help. I tend to, mostly because I'm just really impatient. That's usually the reason why. A lot of times I don't want to do it myself. I'd much prefer give it to somebody else because my time is pretty precious nowadays. But when you try to do things entirely on your own, it either takes 10 times longer, is 10 times more difficult, and it's just super frustrating. So I would encourage to everybody, be an artist in a community. And that's, to me, very much who we are. We're a community, we're a global audience. For example, FOM, first time catching the stream from Switzerland. We also have Ow up here from Manila, Philippines. And that still blows my mind that we have the technology to be able to do something like that. So the whole thing about any portfolio, doesn't matter if it's art school or not, you need that feedback. You need to get a fresh eye on your work, because I just think it's really hard for us to evaluate our own work objectively. I just think it's not possible. And sometimes it's something so obvious. And then somebody says it to me, I'm like, oh, right. Anna was lucky. I went to a magnet arts program, had a great teacher there. That is phenomenal to have that, because in high school, a lot of people, depends on where you grow up, obviously, but a lot of people have trouble finding somebody who they can trust. I think trust as a teacher is very important. It's hard to earn. sometimes take me all semester. Sometimes I never earned a student's trust. But I do think that students need to feel a certain degree, I guess, of artistic safety. Maybe that's the way to think about it, in order to flourish. Janice is saying, are there a lot of companies out there that a new graphic design grad can go get on entry-level GD position? How easy is it to get started in that field? I don't know a huge amount about the graphic design industry. I will say that there typically are way more concrete positions being full-time at a company. For example, illustration, there aren't really illustration full-time jobs at a company. Pretty much almost all illustration is done freelance. And so usually you're a contractor. I'm sure GD, you can do the same thing, but there are so many advertising agencies. It's just the numbers are so much higher in terms of the opportunities. And I am not somebody who likes the freelance life. So if I was in GD, that's probably the way that I would go. Fom is saying, I was being told that architecture design would be a better career path for me. Being an architect for 12 years now, I'm looking into apply for an art school. Oh, wow. So that's a big pivot. I love architecture, but I know nothing about the field. I do have a former student who is an architect now, and actually I ran into him in Providence a couple of months ago, and he was talking to me a lot about the software that you need to learn. And we were discussing the old school analog ways of doing things and how things are done now. I think that is really critical, though. Whatever field you decide you want to go in, you have to stay very up to date with all of those changes, because companies really want to know that you can just jump in with any particular type of software. So if there's any career advice I would give to people pretty much in any field, is you have to stay on top of the new technology, because if you don't, it could be the difference between whether somebody hires you or not. Kara Sue's asking, from my understanding, there's a huge difference between what many colleges look for in portfolios. I was actually encouraged to draw fantasy art and original manga art by admissions at School of the Art Institute of Chicago. One thing that is a good strategy for portfolios is to have a core of pieces. But the thing is, as Karasu says, depending on the school that you apply to, you may take out or put in other pieces. And that's where another mistake comes up with art school portfolios, is people don't do the research. And so if you come together with one portfolio and you just blanket send it to all the schools, that's actually a big mistake, because you really have to understand what the school program's about. Some art school programs are extremely academic, but other ones are, let's just say, a little more artsy fartsy would be the way I would put it. And so oftentimes what people do is they will go and look at the art school rankings. I understand that, but the thing is, people don't realize that it's not actually the school sometimes. It is that, but it's also a lot about the department. You have to make sure the department you want to go into actually matches. So my best example, RISD's ranked one of the top art schools in the US, but the problem is that each department is so different. So for example, if you want to get a big animation industry job, like work at Pixar or something like that, RISD is actually a terrible fit for that, because their film, animation, and video program is super artsy fartsy. It's very much independent filmmaking, film festivals. Like, they are not going to teach you industry standard software. And I know this because my spouse used to teach the 3D animation class at RISD, and for a while they had the intro class and an advanced class. And a couple of years later, they cut the advanced animation class. I was like, okay, so in the entire department, there is one 3D animation class? how could you possibly learn anything in depth, much less be at industry level to be able to do something like that? So that sort of blew my mind. And so if you want to work at, say, Pixar or something like that, CalArts is a way better fit for something like that. Kara Sue's asking, what art degree should I get in order to be a board game artist? Can you follow up and tell me what you mean by board games? Like, do you mean manual board games like Candyland or Monopoly, that type of thing? So I know more specifically. Dillard is asking, should a MFA portfolio include everything, or should it tailor or be focused on a specific core concepts? It should not include everything. The BFA portfolio and the MFA portfolio are polar opposites. To sum it up in a nutshell, BFA portfolio, they want to see diversity of media, of subject matter. Diversity is a gigantic asset in a BFA portfolio. Now, in an MFA portfolio, totally different story. They do not want to see you jumping all over the place. They don't want to see you submitting pieces that look like they were a homework assignment. They don't want to see sketches of a model posing. Those all look like homework assignments that somebody would have done, and they don't want that at the MFA level. What they want to see is a vision that has matured beyond homework assignments. They want to see that you can answer one question: why? Why are you making this work? Why have you chosen to use this material? Where do you see yourself going? I know a lot of people don't like to talk about their artwork. It's awkward for a lot of artists, but the MFA application is all about that. You have to justify, you have to explain. None of this, oh, I felt that way, it's not going to fly at an MFA program. And so you have to demonstrate that you have some type of vision. Now, that's not to say that an MFA portfolio has to be one body of work. It's not like that. I mean, if you were a professional artist and you were trying to propose a solo show, yes, then you want absolute cohesion. MFA portfolio, not so much, but it does need to show that you are not jumping all over the place and doing whatever, that you have some degree of focus. Al is asking, how do we get credentials in FA outside of four-year course? Is there a shorter certificate course that we can take? I've taken summer courses, but those seem not enough for galleries to take seriously. It depends on what you're trying to do. And actually, Al, I don't know what FA is. Maybe you mean BFA, I'm not sure. So if you can follow up and let me know. But that's another mistake with especially MFA portfolios, that people say, well, if I want to do this, I need to get an MFA. And I've counseled people who, after talking to them, I'll say, you know something, an MFA isn't actually what you need. You would do better if you did a residency or took a month off to just work on your stuff. Because that's the other issue, is that art school is expensive. And a lot of people have this in their mind that, oh, if I get an MFA, I'll get this. It's like, no, it's not like that. There's no guarantee of anything. The only thing an MFA degree can guarantee you is that you are eligible to teach at the college level. But then none of that's guaranteed either. And academia is terribly competitive. It's not a life that is easy for a lot of people. Karma's asking, actually, this does relate to art school portfolios, because I think especially parents really want to know, is art school a good investment long term in terms of preparing my child to exist as a professional artist afterwards? So Karma just got into an MFA program, congratulations, with the hopes of becoming a professor. How hard is it to get a job after we graduate? What was your experience? I'm not a great person to ask because I'm a little bitter about my life in academia. In a nutshell, because it's a whole other conversation, full-time tenure track positions in academia are extremely difficult to get. It's basically saying that you want to be an A-list Hollywood star is that rare. Because here's the thing. Schools are cutting those positions so much. They're becoming more and more reliant on adjunct faculty. And that's one thing. And then to put things in perspective, to look at those applications, it's 400 applicants for one job. I mean, it's really, really difficult. I think a big part of it is you can't wait for people to come to you. You have to put yourself out there. I got my RISI job because I reached out to the department heads and I said, hi, I'm available. And they didn't hire me right away, of course, but they did call me a year later. And so you've got to take self-initiative. I'm shocked that people think they just have to wait around for somebody to discover them. Because if you do that, you're going to be waiting for a very, very long time. And by the way, everybody, if you are looking for professional support, ongoing comprehensive critiques, and access to voice sessions regarding BFA and MFA applications, we do have our Art School Portfolios group. This is $30 to $40 a month, and you get lots of support because you know something, if there's any time to get support, it is now. Don't wait until your portfolio is finished. Oftentimes, and here's another thing we offer is portfolio critiques. People will get a portfolio critique 2 weeks before the deadline. And at that point, I'm like, I can't help you that much. There's not a lot you can change in 2 weeks. So now is the time to get that initial feedback. If anything, call it portfolio checkup, just to see, okay, here's where you are. This is what you need to stop doing. And these are the things that you need to push further. Brainu says, when crafting a portfolio is something like a collagraph print, I think you mean C-O-L-L-O-G-R-A-P-H, collagraph, like when you stick things onto a plate. Original storyboard, something that'll help me stand out in the admissions process for someone who wants to be in an animation program. Storyboards are very helpful, absolutely. I would research how they're done though, because there is a particular format that you need to follow for storyboards, and collagraphs are great. The main thing is you want to demonstrate your willingness to do a lot of different things. And so sometimes I would look at portfolios, like I looked at one last year, it was all digital. And I said, listen, you can't apply with all digital work. And the thing is, all the work looked the same. I was like, maybe you could put in two of these out of a 20-piece portfolio, but you can't have 100% digital. A little different if you're applying for an MFA. For example, let's say you're doing an MFA in digital media. Fine, that's okay. But for undergrad, no. The BFA and MFA applications are extremely different. So Karasu's following up. Tabletop board card games like Clue or Monopoly. Okay. I'm not entirely sure. I don't know a lot about the board game industry, but actually industrial design could be a place where that's done because board games have to be functional. And that is a lot of what industrial design is. You'd have to look into it because I am not totally sure. Okay, so Al was following up fine arts. I'm an economist statistician, so have no credential in fine arts, but would like to gain credentials. I've just started joining group exhibits recently. Yeah, the thing about credentials is they're not always as important as you think they are. And if you want to exhibit, you don't need a degree. Sometimes it helps, especially at the higher level galleries. I think they're the ones that really, really care. But if you're showing at more local galleries and you want to do that, I don't think you need art school. I think art school is if you really want hard skills. For example, if I want to go into industrial design, yes, I need a degree. industrial design is not really something you can learn on your own. I mean, there's probably a degree that you can learn on your own, but we actually posted a short a little ways back where Dorian, one of our teaching artists, he gave us a private tour of the industrial design facilities at RISD. And they have so many machines. There's no chance you could ever do that online. And so a particular field like that, yeah, you need that. Architecture too. I mean, you have to be licensed to be able to do that. But things like illustration and fine arts, a lot of that you can do online. And remember, we have all kinds of options for all of you in terms of studying and getting comprehensive professional feedback. For example, this is our Patreon group, and this is a group of people from all over the world who want to create their work. And you get professional feedback from me, from the staff. And so this is a terrific option because a lot of people cannot go to art school, cannot afford it. And that is a way you can study and get support, because I've had a couple people in the Patreon group who had never shown their work anywhere. And there was one person I was talking to yesterday who, since they have been with us, have done something like 2 art fairs, a solo exhibition. And that was something that they did an amazing job with. And we were right there with them the whole way through. And so the Patreon group is really a great option instead of art school. I know it's not the same thing as art school, but what I'm trying to say is people oftentimes think that you can't do these things until you have a degree. And that's just not true for particular fields. So there's a conversation in here about teaching, because a lot of the reason why people get their MFA degrees is because they want to teach at the college level. That was the same thing for me. I really wanted to teach. And so Anna is answering an earlier question from Karma. It's extremely hard. I've applied to so many teaching jobs. I was in academia for 14 years. Not 14. I was at RISD for 14 years. I was in academia for 16. And I applied to every job that was out there. And you know what depresses me so much, which still makes me feel crappy about myself? I never got past the first round, because these college teaching jobs, there's the initial interview and then they pick finalists. I was never once in 16 years was I ever a finalist. And I think I'm okay. I don't think I'm the best artist or teacher, but I'm pretty fine. I think I'm qualified for those jobs, and it's really difficult. Yeah. Adjunct is about as much as you can get these days, and another conversation, but adjunct is the most terrible life. You get paid so little. There's no job security. I spent 16 years wondering if I would have a job next month. It was really, really bad. It's okay if you have somebody supporting you, like my spouse is the breadwinner in my family, so I was able to do that. But anybody who's on their own and you don't have that type of support, I don't recommend adjunct. It's just so stressful. And Dillard says, so a narrative type of case study approach would be better for developing the portfolio for an MFA. I have a lot of life experience, as I'm a bit older than some of the people here. When I did my MFA, one of my good friends, Jiwoong Che, who, by the way, if you guys have been following my very stressful journey of making that silicone rubber mold, he's the one who taught me everything I know about casting. And he was 40 when he did his MFA. I think I was 26. But in MFA programs, you will find people of all ages, which I think is fantastic. So it's great, Dillard, having those stories, because actually what I hear a lot from younger people is that, oh, I've got the skill. I don't know what I want to work about. And so it's really nice when you don't have to think about that. But translating that into a body of work, writing the artist statement, is very, very challenging. And so that's the other mistake that I see a lot of people doing, in MFA portfolios is that they don't start the artist statement early enough. Some people will just make the whole portfolio and then write the statement. And I think that's a big mistake because the artist statement has to grow with you. I know for me, my artist statement, it is not a static experience. It is something that keeps growing and changing. And I find a lot of MFA students, they don't realize how incredibly important the statement is to their application. I know I didn't. When I applied to graduate school, I did not spend the time I should have spent on my artist statement. So what I tell MFA applicants is start the artist statement now. It may feel like, oh, isn't it too early? No, start putting those ideas down, watch them develop, because they're very difficult to write. I don't know anybody who thinks an artist statement is easy. And I feel like out of a lot of the portfolios that I review, I feel like I can remember two that were really outstanding that were written on their own. And as I said earlier, in the art school portfolios group, that is a big component of the feedback, is I do look at artist statements. I don't do full out hands-on editing. We do offer a service that does do that. But especially in the MFA group, I spend a lot of time talking to people about their statements. So this is not something that you want to put off in any manner. Kara Sue's asking, how can I figure out how classes are taught at different colleges? How are they presented? How much hands-on stuff? How many breaks? I would try to follow some of the artists, the students that go to that school, because a lot of them will post their projects. They'll post what they're working on. That's probably the best way, because you're not going to be able to get access to, say, a syllabus from outside. And Kara Sue's asking, what's the difference between personal style and art that looks bad on applications? It's hard for me to give an answer for that because there's no inherent, this always looks bad. The one thing I can tell you is the BFA programs, they really don't like seeing fan art. They really don't like seeing anime. That's that particular context. I'm not saying that fan art is bad. I'm saying that that particular context, they don't want to see that type of thing. So that's one thing to think about. Yes, and this is true. I did the exact same thing. Oftentimes teachers have multiple jobs. They'll teach at a community school, retirement center, etc. I remember at the height of my adjunct life, I was teaching at three schools. I was teaching at Walnut Hill School, which is a private preparatory school in Natick, Art Institute of Boston, which at the time, that's what it was called, but now it's become Lesley University. Lesley University actually bought Art Institute of Boston. And I was teaching at School of the Museum of Fine Arts. And I had days where I would teach a three-hour class at SMFA, eat lunch in my car as I drove to Walnut Hill to teach in the afternoon. And it's crazy. So I was teaching 5 days a week, but it was split up between three schools. And it's very stressful. I would not have the energy to do that now. I was probably 32 at the time, so it was fine, but not anymore. But yes, for those of you applying to MFA programs and who are interested in teaching, it is a pretty bleak atmosphere right now in academia. Good point from 7A. Statements, artist statements, have to be one of the hardest things to write. They walk this fine line of saying something and just being word salad. Well, I find that a lot. When I review MFA statements, so much of the time I'm telling people, listen, all those words are not really conveying your message. If it takes you four sentences to say that your work is about humans and technology. That's a problem. I think, at least in the initial part, I'm not saying you shouldn't explain more. I'm just saying the opening line of your statement. If it takes you 50 words to say one thing, that's a bad thing. So I constantly encourage people, listen, use plain language, because I feel like when people use all those fancy words, I feel like they're sort of hiding behind the fancy words and they're not getting to the point, because saying something in plain language and a straight, clear manner is extremely hard to do well. I think people stuff their resumes, their statements with all these things. And I read the statement and I'm like, listen, most of this was fluff, just words thrown in, or people try to use buzzwords. I think that's also not good. For example, my favorite buzzword, and they love this at RISD, critical making. Like, what is critical making? Making, you make things that are critical. Like, I know you're critical of things you're making. I have no idea, but I hate that buzzword. It's so annoying. Rochelle's asking, should your MFA portfolio all be cohesive? It doesn't have to be. You don't have to have it like it was a solo exhibition at a gallery. You don't need that. But you do need to show that you have focus. If you have stuff from all over the place, that's not good. But for example, let's say you are a painter, but you also do some printmaking. You can add the printmaking to that portfolio. That's okay. And I know a lot of students do that. David says, these programs are good if you want to increase your chances of getting a life-sustaining job in the art industry. I'm an amateur freelance artist. My lack of an education limits my options. It does in a certain way, but I will also tell you that so much of the reason sometimes that people are struggling with a freelance career is that they're not doing enough self-initiative to get their work in front of people. And that's actually not related to your artwork. That's actually related to your communication skills and how much you're willing to do. Because I've worked with a lot of RISD students, former students, they call me up for career advice and they'll say, well, nobody's hiring me. And I'm like, well, have you been interacting? Are you following art directors? Are you commenting and getting to know people? They're like, oh, I sent an email. I'm like, what did you send the email? 3 months ago. I'm like, do you think sending an art director one email is going to get you recognized? No. I mean, I stalk art directors online and it works. I got a whole bunch of them to follow me, because actually Kat told me when she was an art director at Airbnb that she had a roster of artists who she would have as a list. All right, these are the people that I would like to hire. And guess what? She had a separate Instagram just for that, so she could follow all the artists that she would like to hire. And I do the same thing. Like sometimes I have something I need done, and so I'll go through my Instagram and I'm like, oh, who am I following? And do that. And so I said to this student, I said, listen, you've got to get on Instagram. You've got to be having conversations, because it's amazing. Sometimes you make a comment about somebody's dog on Instagram and then you write a couple intelligent comments and really try to engage. And it's like, wow, you get to know people. And some people you will get crickets for sure. But I reached out to a particular artist who's very successful in the movie poster industry. And I asked him some question and he was so nice. He wrote me this whole thing. He sent me some pictures. I was like, wow, like I wouldn't think somebody like you would have the time to reply to something like this. And since then, because he opened that door, I've commented more. I've asked him more questions. I mean, that is the way to get freelance work, is you've got to be in front of people, even if it's just a comment about their dog. Because you know what? Everybody reads comments on Instagram. Tell me in the chat, when you see on Instagram that you got a comment, do you read it? Everybody does. I'd be shocked if you guys tell me no, I ignore the comments. And so when you comment on someone's Instagram, especially, I mean, if you comment on Hugh Jackman's Instagram, yes, probably no reply. But a lot of these art directors don't have gigantic followings. A lot of them have a couple thousand, maybe. And so when you follow them and you comment, they really, really notice. And we also have Linda B, who says, better to describe what that buzzword means to you as an artist rather than to use the buzzword. Yep. It's hard to write statements, I understand. Between the BFA and the MFA application with the statement, I can tell you guys that in the MFA, it has tremendous weight. BFA, it matters, absolutely. But the MFA statement is so critical to your application. Kara Sue's asking, what's the difference between illustration program at an art school versus regular college? Thinking about applying to the IUPUI in addition to Columbia College Chicago and School of the Art Institute of Chicago. It really depends. The biggest difference most of the time is that a liberal arts college, unless they have like a school of art, for example, Boston University has a whole school of art inside the university. Okay, so that place is probably pretty comprehensive. But I taught at Wellesley College, which is a smaller liberal arts college, and they have an art and art history department. But the biggest difference is they would only have a couple classes per topic. And there were a lot of topics they just didn't have. Like they didn't have illustration. They did have fine arts. They had printmaking, digital media. I can't remember if they had some architecture. I think they didn't. Anyway, you again, gotta do your research. Because if you're an art major at Wellesley College, that's very different than if you are at Boston University's School of Art. For example, University of Michigan also has a large school of art. They have a very rigorous figurative sculpture program. And so situations like that are very different. So a lot of people don't take the time to do that research. Dillard is asking, what is a good outline for an artist statement? We do have a complete guide to artist statements on our website. So if you go to artprof.org and you click into the search bar, artist statements, it will pop up. And so the thing about artist statements is you need to address a couple things, which are very important. You have to address the motivation. Why are you making this work? Why are you choosing to use this material? And then how do those two things relate to each other? A lot of statements do like for you to talk about your inspiration, but not just saying they inspired me. I like her stuff. Like you really have to make a deeper connection in that way. For example, some of you may have seen the watercolor video I recently released with Andrew Raftery, and he talks a lot about, I think it was 18th or 19th century watercolors in Britain. And he also talks about Mary Ellen Best, who was a brilliant watercolor artist, and he analyzed a lot of her paintings to create his technique with watercolor, picking the tools and everything. And so that's a very in-depth motivation for making the work. Because what I see a lot in artist statements is people saying things like, oh yes, this person inspired me. I like their stuff. It's like, just because you looked up an artist online and read about them, it doesn't mean that they actually have a significant connection to what you're doing. And then the other thing about the artist statement that I think is the biggest mistake is when people try to write about why that program is a good fit for them. And that is extremely common on a statement that they will ask for, why do you want to be a part of this program? And so much of the time, everybody says the exact same thing, which is, I want to be with a community of artists. I want to learn from faculty. I want to have peers. I want to be able to have a career. Every single MFA student is going to write that. And so you have to find a way to customize those things that are specific to the program. So what I see a lot in artist statements for MFA, it's two things. It's either people are being too vague, the word salad we talked about, and also that what they talk about is very generic. I guess that was three things. But if you read part of your artist statement, and it sounds like it could have been written by anybody, that's a problem. I mean, if I had a dollar for every person who told me that their work was about the environment or women's issues or humans and technology, those are all fine themes. I'm not saying you can't do those themes, but they are so gigantic and everybody's doing them that you've got to find a way to make that relevant to you, specific to you. So that vagueness, the generic quality of the statements, those are the two things that are problematic in MFA portfolios. Iron Harpoon is asking, what kind of character design should be in a BFA portfolio? Does it need to have deeper meanings behind it? It's not so much deeper meanings, but it is about a similar thing I was just talking about, is something that's generic. So oftentimes I will look at character designs and a lot of the clothing is very generic. You know why? Because people don't do research. They just say, oh, he's going to wear a boot, so I'll just draw a boot. But if you research the history of boots, depending on the culture or even time period you're looking at, boots can be so many different things. And the other thing too is a mistake I see in character design is people will make the boots a certain way because, oh, that'll look cool. It's like, no, you have to actually think through the psychology of the character. So if this is a character from the 18th century, they're not going to have a boot that looks a certain way. And not just 18th century, 18th century London, 18th century in the Himalayas. I mean, those are very, very different places. So often I see people, they are just thinking about the visual of a character. They're not thinking about the narrative and the visual choices that come along because of the narrative. So that's the biggest thing, is that people don't think enough about why that character would wear that. It's like fiction. I know in writing, they say that you need to design your characters to such a degree of depth that you would be able to explain what they would eat for breakfast. And you would say why they eat that for breakfast based on their character. Same thing with character design. Karasu's asking, how much of my personality should go into my artist statement? How much creativity should I include? The statement is not really about creativity. It's more about a verbal explanation of your motivation, why you're doing what you're doing. So it's not so much personality, it's more about clarity in your writing. And that's where I do recommend for a lot of people, get feedback on that artist statement. That especially, that is not something that you want to do entirely on your own. I mean, ask yourself, why do you think writers have editors? So that way they can get that feedback. And we do provide some of that in the art school portfolio groups, but if you want hands-on editing, we do have editing services for you to take a look at. And why Sue Down? How would you differentiate fine arts and illustration? Well, I've had my foot in both worlds. And the biggest difference fundamentally, and let me tell you, there's a lot of gray area where fine art looks like illustration and illustration looks like fine art. So some pieces to me really straddle both. Like I think Norman Rockwell is an example of that. He's considered an illustrator, but I went to the Norman Rockwell Museum. I'm like, dude, this is better than a lot of the other fine art stuff. And yet it's not categorized as being fine art. But the biggest difference is that when I switched into the illustration department, because I was in the painting department for one semester, and then I switched into illustration because painting department wasn't a great fit for me. It wasn't giving me what I wanted. The illustration teacher I had, Fred Lynch, who's brilliant and is still there, he described the first day of the illustration concepts class. Illustration is visual communication. So there's something you are trying to communicate specifically. So if you are asked to do an editorial illustration in a newspaper, you have to think about what is that article about. So let's say the article is about school lunches. You have to make an illustration that represents what that article is saying. So maybe the article is saying, oh, these school lunches are really helping these kids. You have to make an article that shows that. You can't just draw a school lunch. Like, that's not visual communication. Visual communication is talking about what that article is talking about. Now, fine arts doesn't have that. Fine arts, you communicate, but in a different way. You're not trying to be so specific. And there are a lot of pieces that don't communicate in a clear-cut manner. And some of those are incredible pieces. So that's the main difference. And also, illustration is very prompt-driven. So in illustration, you're given a prompt. Here's the newspaper headline, illustrate this. Fine arts, you don't have that. You can just make your own prompt. That's pretty much the biggest difference. Iron Harpoon says, does character design for BFA portfolio need to be about humans? Also, can it have horror elements? What is the limit to the horror elements it can have? Does not need to be all humans. Creature design is a huge part of character design, which is fascinating. And we do have a wonderful character design tutorial with illustrator Julie Ben Bassett. So if you just put into YouTube art prof creature, you'll find it. It can have horror elements, but I would just say I wouldn't do anything that is going to get in the way of the person appreciating the work, because one thing to be conscious of, I love horror movies. Okay, I think they're the best thing, but a lot of people really do not like horror movies. And if I was an admissions officer and I was very squeamish and didn't like horror at all, that just could be an immediate turnoff because of their preference. And sure, people have to be subjective, but the thing is, I mean, objective. But the thing is, if a viewer is engaging with something in that manner where they just have sort of like an instant turn off there, that's usually a big problem for people looking at the work. Remember, everybody, we do have our Art School Portfolios group. This is where BFA and MFA applicants, you get access to voice sessions, professional feedback, and comprehensive critiques. It's a wonderful group. It's in full swing. So it's $30 to $40 a month. And there's information on it in the YouTube video description below. ArtProf also has services. Very helpful for your portfolio. We do portfolio critiques. That's 30-minute video critiquing your portfolio. We also have artist calls. Sometimes a portfolio critique is not that helpful until you've really gotten a feeling for what you need to work on. And so an artist call is a really great way to get, I guess, a portfolio checkup. And remember, we also have editing services for artist statements. Please join us for a live chat right after this stream in the Discord. Meet in the Post Live Streams channel. And if there are any questions that we did not get to today, you can certainly talk to me about that in a few minutes. ArtProf has a podcast. It's available on Spotify and also on iTunes. Go to artprof.org because guess what? We have complete guides for BFA and MFA portfolios. So if you type into the search bar, 2025 BFA, 2025 MFA, you will find those pages which consolidate all of our information on art school portfolios. Subscribe to our channel for more tutorials, critiques, and business tips. Everybody, thank you so much for watching. We'll see you next time. Bye.